Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And Leo.
And tonight we have an exciting show for you. We have two great interviews.
Yeah, it's pre-taped. We taped them last night. We're actually going to play both of them tonight. Our first is with Eileen.
Our dear friend Eileen Proctor.
She's been with us. She's been a public relations contact for us for about since we started our show in 2003.
And there's nothing like having a contact that you're simpatico with, so many ways.
And she's a member of Code Pink, and
she's a great lady.
She's got a tremendous following, and she's
real activist.
As we talk, she talks about a bit, but she was also chapter 12 of my book, Naked at the Mic. It's called Public Relations Princess of the Political Left. That's chapter 12, and it talks about Eileen. But she recently did something that fascinated me. She and Jody Evans, co-founder of Code Pink, and a couple others, and Cindy Sheehan's sister, went to a Karl Rove
book signing, and
we talk about this.
Yeah, she'll talk about it.
And they tried to handcuff from Karl Rove, but it's kind of fun. You'll absolutely like her.
And then we have a real departure from that from politics and everything in our second interview with Cariona McGregor, partnering with nature, the wild.
Cariona
McGregor, partnering with nature, the wild. Path to Reconnecting with the Earth, and this is a great book, and I give a little preface to it before the interview, which is on tape too.
So I
hope you enjoy those interviews. They're interesting, and two very different ones.
Yeah, and hopefully our tape system will hold up for both interviews. If not, we will be back.
That's right.
But in the meantime, we're going to start right away. And but we have a couple of things. I also read an actual review that was done by Hank Albarelli on my latest book. It's up on Amazon.com. You can check out the review there if you're interested. But I also read that at the beginning of the show here. So I'd like you to take a ride backwards with us in time to last night on the WQQQ. 103.3 FM show that we did, and these are the two interviews. So I hope you enjoy. Four people.
Well, I have our two regulars, and then we have two guests.
Yeah, so four people. Usually we have three things going on, but tonight we got four. I get one of my favorite people in the world is besides Lila and all of my good friends and stuff, but is Eileen Proctor, princess of the, she's the political, I'm sorry, I wrote it, I'm having difficulty with this, she's a public relations lady out in Beverly Hills, and her name is Eileen Proctor, and she's chapter 12 of my book, Naked at the Mic, The Survival of the Liberal in a Time of Peril, and I call her in the book, the title of the chapter is called The Public Relations Princess of the Political Left. And she's a riot, and you're going to get a chance to listen to her tonight at around 8:15. And she did something really
wrong. Yeah, she's
going
to talk to us about how she tried to arrest and handcuff Dick Cheney.
No, Karl Rove. Come on.
Karl Rove? Sorry.
Man, much more. I mean,
I thought it was
Dick Cheney is the ultimate villain. You just hang that guy. But Karl Rove,
handcuffing
Karl Rove was the coolest thing, because this is what she and Jody Evans, who's co-founder of Code Pink, and they went to Karl Rove's book signing somewhere in some hotel somewhere. And,
where he is feeling very smug and self-satisfied.
Yeah, he's giving a speech and everything, and she and I'm going to have her talk about
it. Yeah, she can tell it better.
But she and Jody Evans and Cindy Sheehan's sister and one other woman, I forget her name, but they One of them, so all three of them, or one of them, if I recall, actually went up on stage with a pair of handcuffs and tried to handcuff Karl Rove. And Karl Rove ran away like a scared little bear that he is, scared little mouse. I mean, he couldn't stand up to these women,
and he canceled
the book signing. Oh, it'll be more fun with her, but you know, he canceled the book signing. People paid $40 to get into that place to listen to him, and he wound up not even signing a book and running like a little bastard away from four women. You imagine that? Four middle-aged women. It's just hysterical. But what a cowardly creep he is. But anyway, she's going to talk about that episode tonight.
That'll be fun.
And she also, there's a video on that, too, on the Code Pink website. And I think it's called classicallyliberal.com is also
So that'll be coming up in a couple of minutes.
Yeah,
not too far away. But
she writes a part of an article on that, and there's actually a video up on it where they did it. What's the matter, Lila?
Well, we have
a
whole lot to do, and you got to keep us behind here.
I know, Lila.
And then we also have partnering with nature, and that's by Kat Riona McGregor. And we're going to be interviewing her at about 20 minutes of around that time. And then at 9 o'clock, we have the regular In the Ring with Woody. Yep. And then at 9:30, we have John Brennan for his environmental segment.
That's
and in between that time, you might hear a word or two of news, of current news.
I definitely have some music tonight that we're going to need a break for that. And it's a kick-ass medley tonight. So what the thing has that thing has that we want to do. I got a remarkable review from our buddy Hank Alvarelli, who we had on the show last 2 weeks ago, I believe it was, and 2-3 weeks ago now. He was the author who wrote A Terrible Mistake, which was the I got that coming up. A Terrible Mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And which was the story about Frank Olson, who died from LSD.
During the CIA's experiments during the Cold War, I think.
It's a long story. You can check it out. People who listen to the show.
Yeah,
I want to thank everybody. Dan, he had a remarkable response from our audience to his book, and he thanks everybody. But he actually was excited about my book, and he ordered it from Amazon, because the only way you can write a review on Amazon is if you buy a book from him. So he bought the book, and it took him 3 weeks to get through the book, 2 weeks, I think, 2 weeks. And he came up with this remarkable 5-star-plus review of the book. And I'm going to have Lila read it because it would sound too overbearing of her too.
Naked at the Mic, The Survival of a Liberal in a Time of Peril by L.A. Steele, reviewed by Hank Alvarelli Jr., 5 stars. This is what Hank says about the book. A few weeks ago, I received a call from L.A. Steele, a man I knew nothing about. L.A. told me he wanted to interview me on his radio show about my book, A Terrible Mistake, The Murder of Frank Olson and the CIA's Secret Cold War Experiments. L.A. was quite familiar with the Olson case and was eager to learn more about the murder of this Army biochemist. I sent L.A. a copy of the book, and he interviewed me a couple of weeks later. It was a great interview that quickly evolved into an in-depth discussion about a lot of the ills impacting America today. Talking with L.A. was very much like sitting with a good friend and lamenting the state of things, all while attempting to spin difficult solutions to even more difficult problems. When the interview was over, I actually felt like something had been accomplished. This, I would guess, is the same experience a lot of folks have with L.A. when they go on his show. And just take a gander at the list of folks L.A. has interviewed. It's pretty damn impressive, to say the least. And it's a long list of names. There's Ralph Nader, Ed Asner, Jesse Jackson, Medea Benjamin, Ramsey Clark, and terrific rants on Judith Miller. Remember her? Blagojevich, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and a slew of others. And don't worry if you've missed the broadcasting of these fascinating interviews, because they're all right here in L.A.'s book, Naked at the Mic, The Survival of a Liberal in a Time of Peril. In the book, L.A. stands up for liberalism with all its warts, blemishes, and flaws, and provides a shock and awe and grim but accurate account of its slow demise. It all makes for some very interesting and intriguing reading that can be easily digested in the easy-to-read snippets that Steele provides. If you want a minute-by-minute, blow-by-blow chronicle of both the demise and maybe resurgence of liberalism, this is the book for you. And I hope it is for you, folks. And you can get it on Amazon. It's there.
Amazon.com.
Yeah.
Go look it at the mic.
And that's MIC, Mike, and you'll be able to get that book.
Yeah.
And see what you think. Do you agree with Hank Abarelli? I think you will.
And there's a little arrow on the book when you go to that site, and there's a little arrow on the top of the book, and it says look inside. You just hit that, and it'll give you a five-page or six-page preview. It gives you the front and back of the cover book, and it gives you the first chapter, all right? Of the actual full first chapter introduction page, and I think the afterword is on there too. I think they threw that in. But anyway, just go to that Amazon.com and you can read it. It's also available on BarnesandNoble.com and the publisher's website, which is iUniverse.com. And before I finish, I wanted to mention I had announced that I'm having a book signing next week. That has been postponed due to the I'm having difficulty with the printer. He couldn't guarantee me the books by this week, so I'm postponing the book signing until May 1st, all right, which is a Saturday, and it's going to be at the StoneCircleVideo.com. Again, that's Stone Circle Video on 255 Albany Turnpike, Canton, Connecticut. And again, that's 255 Albany Turnpike, Canton, Connecticut, between 1 and 4 Saturday afternoon. And it's at the Stone Circle Video store. And Bill Busha is the owner, B-U-S-H-A, for those who want to know. And you can call the store between their hours are 11 to 7 Monday through Friday. And Saturday it's 12 to 5. Our book signing, Lila will be there. I'll have George there. I think he'd like to come up.
If he can come.
Yeah, we're going to have...
to have the whole crew there.
Yeah, John Brennan will be with us, and maybe Woody will be with us as well, and there'll be a club. All the gang will be there, and maybe if we're lucky, we can get Joe Libero to come down and possibly even do a remote for us, but we're going to be filming it for television as well. We invite everybody down. That's May 1st, Saturday, between 1 and 3, 1 and 4. Okay, so we'll be there for three hours.
What's their phone number at the
Stone phone number is 860-693-3111. And this is the really coolest place you might want to go to, because they rent the greatest video, stuff you've never seen before. All kinds of on all kinds of archaeological things, aliens, metaphysical, esoteric knowledge. I mean, you name it, they got the stuff down there. So it's down at the Stone Circle Video. 255 Albany Turnpike, Canton, Connecticut, 860-693-3111. And Billy Busha is the guy who owns it, and it's going to be Saturday, May 1st, between 1 and 4 p.m.
Okay. Now we should have a word from our sponsor.
Yeah, and then I'm going to go and get my our first guest, Eileen Proctor. Whoa, what happened there? Okay. Hang on one second. Right, we are on our way. There we go. We'll be right back. They keep our streets and parks clean.
They make our schools a great place to learn.
They keep violent felons out of our community.
They even help our children get to school safe and on time.
They are the 35,000 public service employees represented by Council 4.
These employees are dedicated and efficient.
They are accountable to Connecticut taxpayers. That means they don't work for privatized agencies that may hire substandard, non-union workers.
Companies like these are constantly in the headlines with their corruption scandals, which cost taxpayers millions.
That's why it's important to keep public services in public hands with people who work hard around Connecticut and around the clock.
On the state and the local level.
Public service employees are proud to serve you every single day.
Find out more at council4.org. Council 4, AFSCME, a union for all. This ad is brought to you by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. This union is affiliated with the AFL-CIO.
All right,
we're back.
Okay, and Lila, just mention a little bit about Eileen, and we will...
Well, Leo is going to take a minute and call Eileen Proctor. She's our next guest. And Eileen does public relations, actually, from her home and office out in California. And she's put us in touch with a lot of people, and we've been able to have many guests on the show because of her. And she, in her own right, is a very interesting person. She's gotten involved in all kinds of things. She was involved in the 911 movement, bringing out the truth in that. She was very much involved, and she says herself that she lost her political virginity during the voter fraud scandal. I mean, she was passionately involved in that. And the latest thing that she's talked about and she told Leo about was when she had the wonderful opportunity to she and a few of her very close friends to try to handcuff Karl Rove. And I'd like to hear her talk about it, actually. So I guess she's with us. Welcome to the show, Eileen.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Well, I guess you had the exciting experience of trying to actually handcuff Karl Rove. Can you tell us and our listeners?
I wasn't the one. Jody Evans was the one who handcuffed. I was watching and waiting to see what else would happen. Now, start from the beginning, what happened with Karl Rove. I knew that there was going to be a protest. It was held at a very big theater in Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
Al Gore had previously, when he had his book signing, was at the theater. There's something like 3,000-4,000 seats in the theater, plus the balcony. So maybe a total of 4,000-5,000 seats, right?
So this is a very big supportive crowd.
It wasn't that big, though, was it?
Well, hold on.
Okay.
So, you know, I went in, bought my ticket,
mm-hmm.
and I went in with Jody Evans, who is the co-founder of Code Pink, with Dee Dee Miller, who is Cindy Sheehan's sister, and Patricia Fogarod, who wrote a documentary called The Common Ground,
mm-hmm.
or The Ground Truth, sorry. When we went in, although Karl Rove was getting $25,000 for his performance, we were shocked to see that the lobby, which is about as big as my living room, basically, was where they held the meeting because they couldn't sell out.
Oh.
There were about 40 Republicans, maybe about 15 of us. In the whole place.
Really?
Huh. So as contrast to about the 5,000 for Al Gore, it was really rather shocking. So when Karl Rove walks in, he sees Jody, nods to her, and then Jody puts up a peace sign, and then Karl Rove takes his fingers and puts up a three-pronged finger. And I said, what is that? And he said, because we're very close to him, because there's no stage, it's just the lobby. So I said, what is that? And he said, W. And I threw my fingers down and said, oh, you mean M for moron? I'd wish stage afterwards he didn't look at our side of the room at all. All right. Then he starts talking, and in order to ingratiate himself to this average age of 120, who were just ossified with wealth. They were real Beverly Hills.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And born in a bank, Republicans.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first thing he said to ingratiate himself was how convivial the atmosphere over at the White House was, and he was only 15 yards away from Bush's office. And then one day he went down to get his car at the White House valet, and the valet wasn't there, but he saw this gorgeous BMW there. So he decided to take the car for a ride because it had the keys in. And he took it for a ride, and then he hid the car down in the back end of the garage, the White House garage. And when the guy came to look for his car, Karl Rove was in the background chuckling. He thought it was real fun. Well, he did it 3 times with this guy until he finally told him that he was the mischievous little elf that stole his car, and he thought this prank was really endearing. We were shocked.
it sounds like something one fraternity boy would do to another.
It was just a little
bushy kind of prank that was stupid.
Yeah,
but wouldn't it have been?
He wanted to introduce himself. Then, as he got into his talk, he said that there were weapons of mass destruction, but damn Kerry and damn Pelosi and damn Tim Arkin and even damn Jane Harman said it was a lie, and that was the news that got out, not that there were weapons of mass destruction. You're left just scratching your head and saying, you know, is this the Twilight Zone or am I really here?
Right.
Then he started to talk about the economic crisis was totally a Democratic manipulation because it was the Fannie Mae and
Freddie Mac
manipulation that caused the economic crisis. At which point, I think Jody got really fed up and she ran up to him with her cufflinks, with her handcuffs, and said to him, "I want to make a citizen's arrest." And any people in front of him, so some of the Republicans tried to shield him. Old Republicans, I could hardly stand Republicans. And then Patricia Bocard got up and she spread out a sign called War Criminal. Then Dee Dee Myers, Cindy Sheehan's sister, got up and said, "I want you to rot in hell. For what you have done to this country, I think you should never have a night's sleep." And then Jody started screaming, "You ruined this country. You ruined another country. You outed a CIA agent." At which point, everybody got up in the audience. And one woman ran to put her arms akimbo, to shield the audience from the horrible sign of Rove being a war criminal. I want the audience from her shielding. At which point, Rove threw up his hands and said, "Listen, this is the totalitarian left. They never let you say anything. They always dominate everything they have. No dignity." And he said, "I'm going to go in the back and I'm going to sign the books there." And then he split. He disappeared. He didn't sign any books.
Yeah, you're right. He ran. It was amazingly cowardly.
Some man came up to me, started screaming at me that I'm a baby killer.
Oh, really?
And then some woman came up to me, you know, and said, "Oh, you ruined our evening." And I thought that was the greatest compliment I had gotten that evening.
Oh, you are wicked. You are wicked.
Thank you. And I was just beaming. And I meant it. I walked out totally elated that we had ruined their evening.
Oh, you're such a mean, wicked liberal.
I know.
Yes. I would have loved to have done it myself.
But that's one fabulous experience that you had, but I think one of the things that I found really interesting that you said, and I think every follower of politics or contemporary events has an experience like this. And you said I wish you talked to the audience about what you've called losing your political virginity, if you feel comfortable.
It was a while back when I went to, I was working in Ohio, basically, on the vote, and I knew that the vote was tampered with. There was no question of, you know, all the people that we had spoken to who were so devastated, who couldn't go. And it was primarily African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had gone with Jesse Jackson on a bus to Washington, D.C. I had a press conference at the National Press Club, and I said, without a doubt, the press release read, without a doubt, Bush stole the election. Historic press conference, I think it was January 6th, and I went there, and all the reporters were there. Every single press was there. But at the end of the day, nothing was reported. Jesse talked to them. Everybody talked to them. The next day, we went to the Senate, and Hillary Clinton was there, Harkin was there, Vonnegut was there,
Lautenberg was there,
Barbara Boxer was there.
Yeah, Barbara Boxer.
And they had
Barack Obama.
Two or one, except for Barbara Boxer, had said, prior to that, we had prepared a little booklet that talked about all the details that we could muster regarding the stolen election. And proving beyond a shadow of a doubt that the election was stolen. We had given it to every one of the senators. And on the floor, Hillary, Harkin, Ivanovich, expectedly with Ivanovich, but had said they had read the booklets, they knew that there was some tampering, but this should not interfere with George Bush being president.
But so did Barack Obama. Barack Obama was one of them.
No, he wasn't there.
Yeah, he was.
He was, no, I don't think he was.
Yeah, I know he was, because I watched it.
Well, then I don't remember him saying that.
He did. He absolutely did. He said the same thing, and I think Dodd was there as well. Dodd was one of them as well. I watched the whole C-SPAN coverage.
It was stunning. It was stunning. Oh, you know, I might have been in such shock.
Oh, yeah, I know that you were, yeah.
I was just crying.
Yeah.
Because it was such a political prostitution.
Oh, it's mm-hmm. horrible.
So,
that was a big event in your life. I mean, I can't imagine how you must have felt at that moment. And then... returning to California.
You know, obviously, Kerry wasn't an ideal
candidate.
He was totally compromised. But compared to Bush, he was Santa Claus.
Well, I don't know.
At the time, anyway, I think people felt that way. That's true.
But at the time, it was a principle of democracy. And
that's right.
Well,
I agree.
That's what we believed, Eileen. But I strongly well, you know what I wrote in the book and about it. But I still believe that Kerry was the designated loser in that one. I don't think he was he was supposed to win.
Yeah, I think, obviously it looked like that. He had we had been with lots of people who swore that Kerry had told them that he would fight.
I know. That's why.
Right.
Yeah.
He would fight, and he gave up. I think he blinked, and that was it.
And not only did he give up, he didn't support any of their fight whatsoever with any money or attorneys. Or the Democratic Party didn't support you.
I think that was a very disappointing moment in our history.
It was
a shocking moment.
Yes, it Absolutely. Was. It was awful.
Ivanovich, I remember, was talking about. You know, Jesse Jackson and saying that there was no problem with the election if it weren't for people like Jesse Jackson coming in and agitating. This never would have happened. Well, Jesse was sitting next to me.
Right.
I think he turned white.
He left the Senate after that, because they were attacking him personally on this.
Yeah, yeah.
And he left the Senate. He left the balcony with you and.
I think it was such a horrendous moment for everybody.
Yeah, what it looked like.
Well,
I was totally disgusted after I watched that. I was like, oh my God.
Well, it seems like you haven't lost your energy though for being a liberal.
Not at all. People ask all the time, how do you sustain it without getting angry? And I don't know, except that I just feel an enormous sense. Maybe because I wasn't born here, but a sense of what the promise of this country should be and what a betrayal it is that it's not living up to its promise. And I think that my whole concept is just to fight for what I believe America should be.
Well, it's wonderful.
It's an ideal experiment.
I think it's wonderful that we have people like you that are willing to do the things that you do, and that you have so many contacts.
On the other hand, you know, you're just obviously fighting to get into the mainstream is a huge task all the time, and I can give you chapter and verse of all the things that happen when it doesn't happen. But there are huge wins, like when I bought the Pentagon and won.
Mm-hmm.
That was an enormous coup for me.
That one I don't remember.
All right, that's when working with Mikey Weinstein, I think.
Yeah, of course we had Mikey on, yeah.
When
yeah.
Tim LaHaye and Ted Jenkins,
right.
The guys from the Left Behind series.
Oh, yes.
They created a video game called Eternal Forces Left Behind, and they were going to send this fun little video game along with cookies and socks to every soldier and sailor, marine in Iraq and Afghanistan. And in this little video game, every time the soldier wins and kills a Muslim, goes, praise the Lord, praise the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
It would have caused a catastrophe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, I remember.
And
that.
We had it pulled. I mean, that was an enormous coup.
Absolutely.
I mean, getting Vincent Bugliosi on the best seller list when mainstream media wouldn't even touch him.
And
9 weeks on the best seller list.
And we have,
with his book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder.
Right. That's an excellent book. A lot
of our listeners might remember our interview with
Fighting
him
the Good Fight.
Because he was in New Hampshire with you. Oh, was it New Hampshire or Vermont, I believe?
In Vermont. Charlotte Dennett. Yeah.
Right, and
we just wrote a book called The People vs. Bush.
That's correct. I wanted to express my thanks to you. Not only did I do that in the book, but I wanted to thank you very much for all the help you've given us on the show over the years, and the great, great clients, and the great interviews that we've had. And this is actually the first time you've agreed to be on the show with us.
Right.
and I wanted to thank you for that.
Asian Society, because I wanted to thank you for the lovely tribute in your book.
Well, I thank you. And
everyone should buy it.
Before we leave with you, I just want to read these three lines that I closed her chapter with. That's chapter 12. Of the book, and it says, I have devoted this chapter to Eileen to acknowledge her personal and professional commitment to promoting and defending the ideal of liberalism that ennobles the human spirit. To learn more about Eileen, please visit her website, eileenproctor.com. And I highly, highly recommend you check it out, because she's actually got a copy of chapter 12 right there. You can read it for free. Right?
Right.
So, but anyway, Eileen, you've been a great warrior, and for the cause, I'll tell you.
And we really appreciate all that you do.
I'm very lucky. I get to meet many people all across the country. There are two books that I'm going to be making into movies right now. A Terrible Mistake about the CIA.
They are going to do that one?
What?
They're gonna make Hank's.
Friday, we're going to meet them. Friday, they're coming here for the UCLA Book Festival.
I wish them all the best because I read his well, you read it as well, but I read his review of my book at the beginning of the show, and I had Lila read it, and I wanted to thank him so much. I already did 100 times for writing it, but
that's
great news.
That's fabulous.
That's fabulous that he's going to get a movie on that.
And the other book was Daniel Estulin.
Yes, I talked to him last week. We had him on.
What a great guy.
The Bilderberg Group, they're talking today, actually.
Yeah,
Daniel is in Spain. The movie people are talking to him.
Excellent.
And that should be a huge book as well.
Oh, that'd be great.
As well.
Well, I can't wait for you to put
it
on.
Which you haven't gotten.
Yeah.
Is Leah Burton, which we're not only making, we got a book deal, but we also got a movie deal for her, a documentary, and that is Palin's Brain.
Okay. All right.
Without a question mark.
I'm sure that all our listeners are going to look forward to this, and we certainly are too. And we appreciate your coming on.
Maybe we could charm a few people up there as well, and get a movie deal for me.
Okay.
and who would you get to play your part? Who would you like all your friends and all the actresses to play?
Oh, well, there's only one person.
Who's that?
Angelina Jolie.
I will send her a Facebook message right away. She's actually on my Facebook, accepted a Facebook friend.
She's on your Facebook?
She's my Facebook, yeah. In fact, you know, I'm very upset with you that you haven't responded to my Facebook invitation.
I haven't been on Facebook.
I know, send it. You'll be amazed. The client list I have on my Facebook is unbelievable. All right, you'll be impressed.
Well, send it to me and then I'll laugh.
I already did. You just go on your Facebook. It's already there.
Okay, I just haven't been on Facebook for a long time.
That's okay. We love you to death, and we want to thank you for being on, and hope and cheer you on to bigger and better handcuffing events.
And we'll talk to you real soon, Eileen. Yeah.
Perp walk.
Perp walk.
Thanks so much for being with us this evening.
Thank you, Eileen.
Thank you so much.
All right, good night.
Good night. That was Eileen Proctor talking to us from California about her experience with Jody Evans and Code Pink and Karl Rove and...
The beauty of it, and like I said, she's as Chapter 12 of my book, which is entitled The Public Relations Princess of the Political Left, and I got a picture of her in here, too, in the picture section. There's a bunch of pictures, but very beautiful pictures.
She's such a nice person.
Yeah.
She just is wonderful, and I'm so glad out of her busy schedule she could take a few minutes to be with us.
We've known her since the first couple of weeks of the show started. And I talk about her in the book.
And we actually met her
for our next guest
in New York.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Why don't you introduce our next guest, and I'll get her put her on the line.
While Leo is putting a call into our next guest, her name is Catriona McGregor, and the name of her book is Partnering with Nature. Now, this is a really interesting book. It's the way we interact with the world around us affects our health and well-being more than we realize, and in today's world, it's often too easy to forget about the natural world sitting right outside our window. And Katarina talks with that. She weaves together scientific, historical wisdom, spiritual insights, and inspiring stories that illuminate the energies linking humans, animals, and the natural world. And we want to welcome you to the show, Catriona. This is Lila.
Well, hello, Lila, and it's wonderful to be here.
Oh, great. This is a great book. I didn't get a chance to read the entire thing, but I've read a lot of it, and it's fascinating. And in Your fact sheet, as I mentioned before, I felt immediately linked to you when you said your favorite first book was Rima, and there aren't very, very many people in the world that even know of that book. But to have the opportunity to talk to someone else who found it to be their favorite first book, like myself, is unbelievable.
Well, Lila, and I want to ask you, Lila didn't really explain why it was really the first or best favorite book, nor, but I wanted to ask you why, and maybe you can identify with some people in the audience.
Why did you remember that book? Why was it so meaningful to you?
Well, and the title of the book is Green Mansions by Hudson, and I think it was written in the 30s or 40s, so it's an older book, and it's just such a treasure, and it's so beautifully written, and the character, the main character in the story is this woman called Rima,
mm-hmm.
who is almost half bird-like, half human, and she's shaped like a human being, and but she lives in the trees like a bird, and the descriptions that Hudson has, too, of the forest and the jungle in which he lives are so rich and filled with beautiful, beautiful descriptions. So reading the book really pulls you into those gorgeous places. And then she's such a romantic character because she can speak with the animals and, you know, not at a superficial level, but at a very deep, deep level. And she wears a garment made out of spider webs, which is really wonderful too. So she's just an incredible character, and I just read that book over and over and over again. It was one of my favorite books in my father's library, and he had a very extensive library, so I probably read that book about 20 or 30 times.
I was kind of impressed with that factor, but what interested me was your mystical experience that you had at a very young age that brought you into connection with nature and with the spirit of animals and the spirit of nature. And maybe you could like to elaborate a little bit on that, because a lot of people at a young age, I was drawn into that by one reason.
But we lose it as we get older.
About that age, I had a number of mystical experiences involving nature as well, and I think that that children are extremely open to this. But I'd like to ask you how yours went, and maybe you can explain how that led to your authoring of this book and your eventual lifestyle, you know. So please.
I think this is such an important connection that we have with nature, this spiritual connection. So I really delve into that in the book Partnering. And this is something that's been going on for many thousands of years between human beings and nature. And, you know, now the scientists and archaeologists looking at those cave drawings that were
mm-hmm.
created in France of the, you know, the dancing bison and the deer and the horse, and they're understanding that these animals had much greater meaning than just flesh and bone to our ancestors. But, you know, there was a tremendous spiritual connection as well. And I believe that animals also helped our evolving consciousness as well. So I think we are who we are today because of our brothers and sisters, the other animals and living things around us who helped bring us to this place. And I don't think there's any accident that, you know, Buddha became enlightened under a Bodhi tree, or, you know, the burning bush gave messages from the divine. I think that I heard someone say, which I loved, that nature is the clothing of God, and I'd like to say the clothing, rather, of the Creator. So the experiences that I had in nature as a really young person, I think when you're really, really little, you just innately have that connection and that spiritual connection, and it's so much a part of you, I think we're not even aware of it. But when I was 12, and that's often the time in our lives, those pre-teen years, when we start to kind of lose that connection with that kind of more mystical realm or intuitive place of being sometimes, and I had a very dramatic spiritual awakening or reawakening in the forest outside our home, where I felt that I had a communication with the trees and a real connection to a divine spirit.
Now, you were very fortunate to have that, and you've also been able to keep your connection, but children today seem to spend a whole lot of time in front of video games and indoors, and actually, in school, a lot of schools, kids don't spend much time outside anymore. They don't have physical education, they're not exercising, they're not outside. That's in our tough economic conditions, that's one of the programs that goes first. How do you think that's affecting our children and the adults that those children will become?
And I think it's having a very dramatic impact that we're seeing today with this generation. And, you know, obesity is an issue, and that's a real obvious thing. I mean, it's obviously a lot healthier to be climbing trees and, you know, running after butterflies and sitting in front of a TV set. So that's a pretty obvious connection. But I also believe that there's an element of creativity and what I call, you know, inquiry, a heightened level of inquiry and interest, because when you're passively learning, which, you know, TV is or a computer, et cetera, you're not really putting yourself out there. And then, of course, nature is such a great teacher. I mean, nature is one of our best teachers on the planet, and some of the most incredible inventions of our time and some of the most beautiful artwork has been created from people who have observed nature and learned from nature and actually tried to copy nature in many ways. So I think we're missing out if that's not an experience that young people are having today, and I think that this, you know, has long-term could have long-term effects on their, you know, future contribution.
Well, if you don't appreciate your environment and the world you live in very much, you're not going to make sure that it stays safe or that it's protected. And that's of great concern, I think, because after all, we need the world we live in. We need the trees, we need the plants, we need the animals, we need the air and the water.
Yeah, you mentioned in your book the element of that every animal has a spirit.
Mm-hmm.
All living things
have spirits.
Maybe even inanimate things. Well, rocks and great mountains and everything seems to have a spirit, you know. And I agree with that as well, because since I studied some shamanism and so on, and I identified with some of the things you much of what you talked about, but that aspect of the human, animal spirit. Could you elaborate more on that aspect of the uniqueness of each spirit, each animal, insect, flower? Was that part of your mystical experience, or was that an extension of?
That's been a really critical part of my journey and my experience, because I didn't turn to what some people call shamanism today or mysticism by taking a class. Or the way that this all came to me was direct communication from trees and from animals and from animal spirits. And the spirit of an animal is not just the individual animal that you're interacting with, but what I call, or what Jung used to call, the oversoul of that animal species spirit protect and guide the development of that species. And so it's been a really, really important part of my journey, and I also think that it's an important part to everyone's journey on life. We each have an animal ally or guide, even though we may not consciously.
Sorry, I just had to change that.
Has the bald eagle, and you know, there was this kind of tug of war between whether it was going to be the bald eagle or the turkey for many years. Many people have heard of that story. And all, if we look at currency around the world also, I was just looking at a New Zealand $20 bill, animals are often exhibited on currency, and currency is really an energy exchange, an exchange of power too. So the fact that we're putting animal pictures or images of animals on our power exchange or energy exchange is subconsciously showing also that, that we understand that there is an important connection between us. And some of the work that I do with people is to help them realize and experience their animal ally or guide and then develop a relationship with it, because there are things that, that we need to do to reach out to them.
Well, in the indigenous cultures, especially particularly North American Indian, you know, and others, the name identifies somewhat of the spirit, you know, that you identify with, whether you have gray wolf or, you know, hell dreamer, you know, different names that are synonymous to their actual indigenous, you know, to their actual spiritual animal link, you know, the great bear, you know, many mm-hmm. bear warriors, you know,
so if
warriors.
So if a person gets connected with their animal spirit or animal guide, how can that help them?
And I'm sorry, you're saying how can people connect with them?
No, when they do connect with their animal spirit, you said everyone has one. How, in what way does that animal spirit help them?
Yeah, I'll tell you just a brief story from my own life, and then briefly a little bit about Chief Planning Coup of the Crow Nation. And so in my own life, and I work with about 20 or 30 different spirit animals quite closely, and for different reasons, each animal has a different characteristic and rhythm and essence about it for different kinds of, doing different kinds of things. I do work with turkey, and by working with turkey and developing a relationship, I was able to find places in the land of really high, kind of high energy or high beneficial energy that I probably couldn't have found on my own. So that's one example, and
concrete with your listeners too.
You know, we all know that.
I lost you there for a second. Excuse me though. You said you worked with a turkey.
Turkey, I use a capital T.
In the country?
No, turkey animal, the bird, the turkey.
You worked with a turkey. Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I messed that up. Go on. I understand now.
And you know, they're also referred to as the Earth Eagle, and mm-hmm. I use a capital T when I ever refer to a totem animal, because I was having an exchange with a physical individual turkey, but I also recognize that it's the oversoul of the turkey as well. And, you know, we all know through physics, for example, and I cover this in the book quite a bit, that we are all made of matter, which resonates or has a certain frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And so a human being has a certain frequency, and so does an animal. An animal has a certain frequency. And once you can align yourself with the frequency of the animal, you can get so close to its perception and understanding, and vice versa, there's an exchange that happens, that you can almost see the world through their eyes, so to speak. And so I cover shape-shifting in the book, and this is something that very few people today can accomplish, but it is something that was done and has been done. And you know, we have this also in our European myths. You know, everyone's heard the myth of Merlin,
mm-hmm.
the magician, and some people also have heard of the Selkies, you know, the seal people.
Yep.
Have you heard of John Perkins, the author of Economic Hitman?
No. I know of him. I know of him, but
because
I don't know him well, and I haven't read the book.
No. Well. One of his expertise, and what he does and promotes is shape shifting seminars. He's written a book actually on it, and he's worked in that area for many years. But he gives seminars classes, week-long classes or more.
Actually, not too far from here at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York.
That's, well, that was one of the places.
That was one of the places where he had gone in the past to give a workshop on it.
It was amazing, though, when he told us that he was doing this, shape-shifting, because he says it's absolutely real and verified it, that he's
Now, have you been able to do that yourself?
Yes, and these are all experiences that were personal to me, and I've started to help others, do this kind of work recently, just because there's been, people have approached me and asked for help, and I know there's not a lot of people that are doing this at the time, so that is something that I help people to do, and then I also wanted just to say a few words about Chief Plenicu, because your first question was how can spirit animals help us, and
right.
This is a really important message, because today we're facing global warming, which seems like such an overwhelming thing for us to deal with. And I really believe that by partnering with nature and gaining the wisdom that other living things have, that we can help solve this problem, but that we can't do it on our own. And Chief Plenicu went on his traditional vision quest. He was with the Crow people when he was only 9 years old. And the Crow people were facing a similar overwhelming time, in that the Europeans had come to the country and were taking over the Indians' land, etc. And the people were very divided about, what to do about the Europeans at this time. And Chief Plenicu went on his quest, and he had a very, very dramatic vision and a message that came through a tiny little animal called a chickadee, which is a very small bird. And because of that message from the chickadee, if you want to look at it as a totem or an animal, with a message, the Crow people decided to kind of stand by the sidelines instead of take on the Europeans, in violence and war. And they're one of the few tribes that are still have a lot of their native homeland. And all the Native Americans have been mistreated, even the Crow, but at least they were a little bit less than some of the other natives. So that's how animals can help us, and I believe that we need to connect more now so that we can solve issues like global warming and how to use energy.
Well, your book is really fascinating, and it's very interesting, with all kinds of, like, a history of really how to partner with nature, and filled with your own personal experiences, which I found very interesting.
Are you at all a Celtic? Do you have any Druid or Celtic background?
Yes, I am. In fact, I'm the only American born in my family, and they say my ancestors, Rob Roy MacGregor, who the myth of Robin Hood, is derived from him, and I don't know how much is fact or fiction, but I definitely have a lot of Celtic, and my name Catriona is a Celtic name. It's Gaelic for Catherine. And MacGregor is actually from my mother's side. It's my mother's maiden name. And I use that name especially today because our family was banned from using that name for over 100 years.
Why was that?
Well, the MacGregors used to, MacGregor and Mac just means son of, so son of Gregor, and our family arose from the line of King Alpin, who was the first king who united Britain. Britain was very clanny had the different clans, and he united the Picts up in the north and the Scots, etc. And then his line, descendant of the kings, was always through a line of descendants, and after many, many years, the MacGregors backed supposedly the original line of kings, but another line wanted to take over the throne, and they won, and so they displaced the MacGregors from their land, and the MacGregors obviously got upset about that, and one thing led to another, and that's how we got a character like Rob Roy MacGregor, who's a real person, and they saw him as an outlaw because he was going onto the land and, you know, supposedly taking cattle. But of course, the McGregors would say that that was their land originally. And what ended up happening is things really deteriorated, and that there was a law put on the books in Scotland that the McGregors not only were completely banned from their land, but were not allowed to use their name. And because of this, they became known as the Children of the Mist. And they lived up in the Highlands and really learned to live off the land.
Well, that's
well, you have a fascinating background.
Yeah, no, the reason that I mentioned it was asked you of the heritage was because Lila earlier tonight was wondering if you were Celtic, because she's Celtic.
Oh, how wonderful, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm Welsh.
Well, Welsh, you know, but she keeps telling me she's Celtic or some sort. So, it's just interesting that the, because of that connection and that connection of the Celts and the Druids and so on to land, you know, to the earth and the goddess and so on, it was just interesting that she read the same book that you did and there was that intuitive connection somehow to your work. So,
I
don't know where I'm going with this. I just thought it was interesting that there was a connection.
Well, we really appreciated having you on the show, and your book is very worthwhile. And it's, if our listeners would like to get it, it's available at simonandschuster.com.
And it's also up at Amazon.com, and they're actually having a special on the book right now, and it should be out in bookstores, I think.
Oh, good.
And that's, and give me the name of the book again.
The book is Partnering with Nature, The Wild Path to Reconnecting with the Earth by Katerina McGregor. And thank you very much for writing such a wonderful book.
Let's say it again, Partnering with Nature. Yeah, Katrina, give us the name of your book. It's right in front of us there.
Partnering with Nature, The Wild Path to Reconnecting with the Earth.
Okay.
And do you have another book in the works?
Yes, it's in that dream state right now, but I am starting to ready myself for that next one.
Okay.
Well, we'll look forward to that, and when you have that completed, I hope you come back on the show and talk with us.
Wonderful. I would like that very much.
Right.
And we certainly urge our listeners to purchase your book. It's a worthwhile read. And thanks again, Katerina.
Well, thank you. And it's been a delight. And I just wish to say deep blessings of the quiet earth to you both and to your listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thanks for being on.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
And that was... Okay. That was the end of our interview with Katrina, Katriona McGregor, Partnering with Nature. And I hope you enjoyed the Eileen Proctor interview. And you can find out more about Eileen on Eileen Proctor, proctor.com. And... That's the show. So I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight, and we hope that you can join us tomorrow night, Thursday night, when I'll continue reading the Finding the Third Eye, and a fascinating book. I've been doing more reading in that. It's just very a remarkable book, and we'll be talking about that tomorrow night, Thursday night. So hope to join you then. Thanks, and good night.